The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode of the Major Spoilers Podcast is brought to you in part by our patrons, including
Edwin Adelsberger,
Brian Faneuf,
Casey Wilson,
Will Geiger.
Thank you so much for your support. This episode is for you.
The Major Spoilers Podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers Podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue, the six-fingered hand is on the move and is going to take nearly every single defender to fight them off. And literally none of them are the ones you're watching on TV. Plus, traveling in time, living life like a hurricane, witches outstanding in their fields. The summer of 17 may be coming to a close, but your podcasting pals know no seasons nor the insidious ticking of clocks, but instead go on like Leonardo drowning in the Titanic. And the Major Spoilers Podcast is slowly sinking into the sea, which is under the air.
Welcome to issue 741, 741 episodes of this thing. And this thing is the Major Spoilers Podcast. Thank you so much for downloading and sharing this episode with a friend. We're back this week to talk with you, like we always do, about things that are going on in the world of comic books and pop culture. We're going to do a little reviews, talk a little news, get in depth into a trade paperback later in the show. But first, as you know, there's Rodrigo.
Hello.
And there is Matthew.
Up, Raj.
There is no Ashley this week because she's actually in our neck of the woods or traveling back from our neck of the woods.
And she
is not here.
Since we actually exist 20 years behind the rest of civilization, it's going to take her a while to get back.
Yes, I'm sure it will. She has to fly backwards in time through the time zones
forward
back to
into the
West
past.
Coast. Yes. Let's go ahead and do some news. It's a slow news week because, Comic-Con is over and everyone's gearing up for the next Comic-Con. And this is the time for everyone to take vacation before the kids are back in school. Oh, my gosh, the kids are back in school tomorrow. Thank goodness.
No.
Yes.
Mine went back today.
Mine goes back awesome. Tomorrow for a half day and then for the rest of the week. And it's going to be so joyous.
You know what is for me, kids being back in school is a real problem because I live next to a high school.
Oh boy.
And I work next to a different high school. So
all the kids are going to be out there going, "Hey, old man, what are you doing, old man?"
It's a mess. Yeah, kids just crossing streets constantly. Can't drive through.
I lived across the freeway from a high school in Irvine. But I had to drive by that school every morning, and it was literally for that block and a half the school was 20 minutes to drive that block and a half because of all the kids. Ugh.
Wow.
Bleh. News. Skybound heads to Amazon Prime in a first look deal. And we also have D&D Beyond released today. And then, like I said, there's not much else. Kids are going back to school. Hooray. Let's spin that. Let's flip that coin of destiny.
Flip the coin of. Hang on. The coin of destiny came up heads.
Skybound is heading to Amazon Prime for a first look deal. This was announced by Amazon Prime and Skybound Entertainment. For those of you not familiar with Skybound, Skybound is Robert Kirkman's imprint that he has with Image Comics. Yes, Kirkman.
Kirkman!
Every picture that they used in these stories. Poor man's got a poop.
Kirkman. You do. Well, I'm a funny looking man who photographs funny. So I understand. But I think Kirkman has a face that he makes for pictures. So people
probably
are like, that's the Kirkman face.
Yeah. So essentially in this, and some people are freaking out going, oh, does this mean that Walking Dead's going to be off AMC and only on Amazon Prime? Or does this mean that Outcast isn't going to be on whatever network that is on? No. All those things stay in place for now until, Kirkman and the rest of the producers of The Walking Dead sue the pants off AMC for $1 billion. But no, all new projects. And I'm pretty sure Invincible has already been put into a development deal right now. So it's anything else that Skybound, a.k.a. Robert Kirkman and David Alpert put together, produce.
Oh, so I love his work with the Tijuana Brass.
Yeah. This is very similar to our conversation we had, was it last week, on Mark Miller. Miller's World? Not Bobby's World, Mark Miller World.
Bobby's.
Hi, my name's Bobby.
My name's Mark Miller.
I'm Mark Miller. I'm Scottish, so I'm Mark Miller. Hello, how are you?
Amazon certainly has a heck of a lot more money than perhaps Netflix does. What are your reactions to this? Let's start with Mr. Rodrigo Lopez.
Well, I recently watched the Amazon original, Nico and the Sword of Light. It actually got picked up. I'll probably review it on the show next week. But a treatment like that of Super Dinosaur would be nice.
Ooh, there you go.
Yeah.
Matthew, do you have any thoughts?
I think I'm not the first person to make this observation, but I'm a little troubled by the fact that there are now like 35 competing streaming services that if I want to watch all the things I love, I have to sign up for like 20.
Yeah, we talked about that before. In fact, I think that right after our last discussion about that, Hollywood Reporter or Variety or one of those two trade magazines came out with a report saying, hey, look, if you're going for all of these online services, here's how much it's going to cost. It's as expensive or more expensive than your cable that you're currently paying for with all the premium stuff.
My cable internet telephone bill is like $250 a month, so I don't necessarily want to kick it in. That said, my Sarah actually has the Amazon Prime.
Mm-hmm. We do too.
So I don't have to actually, you know, pay for it. I can just go.
But I mean, Amazon Prime, Hulu, Netflix, you know, you get on the CBS app that's coming, the DC app that's coming, the Disney app that's coming because, Disney pulled their stuff off of off Netflix. Well, didn't pull it off, but as soon as the contract expires, Disney will launch its own app. They're going to have their own ESPN app. I've got an MLS, Major League Soccer app so that we can watch all the games. I mean, all these things add up to the point where, we're paying as much right now as our cable bill. And it's crazy. But on the other hand, here's the thing. And I think this is a more positive way of looking at this, is that if it wasn't for the Amazons and the Hulus and the Netflix and the small indie people that are doing these things, we wouldn't be getting potentially Super Dinosaur. Right.
Right.
We wouldn't be getting the Astounding Wolfman or Thief of Thieves or Battle Pope. Because there wouldn't be anybody that would be interested in picking up, but because there's such a demand for stuff and because these networks, I'm going to call them networks, movie studios, are looking for ways of drawing people in, these things are all now under consideration. And I think that's fantastic.
I don't think there's any way that anyone is going to get away with a Battle Pope series.
You never know.
I think it's miraculous that it got away with it as a comic.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, I mean,
the Tick. We would never have, well, we already did have a Tick TV series and an animated series, but we would not have a
three Tick animated.
We wouldn't have a new, we wouldn't have a new Tick series if it wasn't for Amazon going, hey, let's bring this property back and try it out again.
Right. And, you know, that diversification and some would say fragmentation of the viewing market has led to the ability to see things like Powers that nobody thought would ever get made.
Oh, yeah. PlayStation Network, Sony.
It led to Powers being virtually impossible to find because it was on like the PS4 network where you had to like throw salt over your shoulder and bark like a dog on Thursdays when the bells ring.
Believe me, I have that service and it was hard to find when it was at the peak of its interest.
And you've also mentioned that the show itself was
not that great.
Yeah, and was that something that was affected by the fact that we're not dealing with a traditional filmmaking structure? We're not dealing with someone who's, you know, got the what's the word I'm looking for? The superstructure or the, you know.
Well, it's Sony. It's Sony, so they have the budget if they want to put it in. I mean, and that's the thing with the upcoming Teen Titans live action series and the season 3 of Young Justice. I mean, the shows are going to be as good as much as the network or the movie studio is committed to making it that good.
It's $50 for all the flying effects. Make it go.
No, it didn't in that case. But again, Sony could have said, hey, we really want to make a push on this bigger than it has been, or the other failed attempts. I mean, they had to reshoot basically that entire pilot over again. And
which
so,
one?
Powers.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, I don't know. You can make something as great as you want it to make it. And perhaps they didn't have enough faith in the property, whatever. Maybe they got into it and said, oh, wait, this is not going to turn out the way we thought it would be. Maybe people aren't ready for PS4 right now.
They realized it was untranslatable and that the material was not actually in any way suitable for adaptation.
I really don't know about that.
Use the material to adapt it, well, to make it work in another medium.
And to be
it.
Fair, how many things are a direct adaptation of to the screen? Not very many.
And you know what? Sometimes they're better for it.
Yeah. Yeah. This one is just different medium. So in Power's defense, or in the PlayStation Network's defense, it came at a point when no one was really asking for the stuff. And the idea of bleeding edge really hurt Sony in that case. Whereas today, if Sony were to say, hey, we've got this PlayStation Network we're launching and it's going to come out with Powers, people would be totally into it. But at the time, they just weren't. And I just really think it's market saturation and interest in people really not thinking about, you know, what's going on, what can be done with these online properties.
And
I mean, because now you look now and see what Netflix is doing with its original programming and Amazon Prime is doing with its original programming. There's some really good stuff out there. I mean, I talked about this last week. Ozark was really good. I've been watching The Last Tycoon on Amazon Prime. It's really, really good. I can't wait for The Tick coming out later this week. And then, you know, this weekend we get The Defenders on Netflix. These are things that I'm really, really looking forward to. If you were to tell me, Steven, go to ABC and pick something out, I'd be like, there's nothing on ABC I'm interested in watching. And
they canceled,
I think that. Yeah, so I think that that is the. That's the real advantage to having so many sources of outlet for content from Skybound or from whoever else. The drawback is, how do you find that stuff? Because it's going to be incredibly hard as we get more of these things coming out to track it down. I didn't know anything about Ozark. Ozark had been out for, I don't know when that came out. It's been out since July.
Yeah, it hasn't been out that long.
But it took me a couple of weeks to find out that that was coming out, that that was a thing.
Yeah.
And so I fear that when Super Dinosaur comes out, Rodrigo, that unless Amazon Prime is really pushing it every time I log in to Amazon.com over by using that link at majorspoilers.com, you know, it doesn't cost you anything extra. A little bit comes back our way, keeps the lights on. Thank you, everybody, for your support. I may not be able to find it.
I mean, that's possible. I guess really what people are going to have to do is go to majorspoilers.com, listen to the Major Spoilers podcast.
Yeah.
Click on all the ads.
And we'll keep track of that stuff.
That's right. If you click on all the ads, you'll get a secret message from Rodrigo. It's backmasked.
Actually, speaking of secret messages, I watch a lot of stuff on my PlayStation. I also listen to Spotify through PlayStation, and they have an ad that's like this little ad that is like it's an ad for the PlayStation. Yeah, it's an ad for the PlayStation Network, and it has a slate in front of it. It's an audio ad, and it's like it starts out being like PlayStation Network ad, 30 seconds, and then like the ad starts.
Oh, that's
like,
weird.
Did they mean to do that?
I'm gonna guess no.
It's like a weird, like, people have been lying to you. Companies are stupid, so watch stuff on PlayStation, you know? And it's like, is that like, are they going for like a Mr. Robot vibe with this? And I think they just left the slate on. And
is it 30 seconds been, with the slate?
No, it's not. It's more than 30 seconds. And that's how confused I was that I timed it.
Yep. Because that's the point where you think, oh, this is definitely a mistake. Yeah, if it was exactly there, 30 seconds.
Yeah, it's been there for months, and I'm like, I must be the only person that listens to Spotify on PlayStation.
You might be.
Because, like, nobody has done anything about it.
Well, is there like a 3, 2, and then the commercial starts?
No, there isn't.
Oh, okay. That's weird.
Yeah. That is weird.
Well,
but different, you know, different companies have different ways to in which they slate things. And oh, I'm not that familiar with audio stuff specifically, so who knows?
Yeah, that's really weird. But to alleviate anyone's fears, was it someone's fear? I guess it had to be someone's fear, because Kirkman had to go on to Twitter and say, hey, don't worry, everyone. Walking Dead's staying where it's at. Outcast is staying where it's at. You don't have to worry. This is only for new stuff. So, yeah, only new stuff for that first look deal. And, of course, Amazon could say, you know what? We don't want to do Super Dinosaur. Take that over to Cartoon Network. They're eager to pick it up. And do it over there. So there you go. Listeners, head
Cartoon
over to Major
Network. We'll be able to buy 20 episodes and then play two of them every year for the next 10 years.
Yeah. Listeners, head over to MajorSpoilers.com. Share your thoughts on the Skybound heading over to Amazon Prime. We'd love to read your thoughts on that. And while we wait for your comments to come in, let's do some reviews.
Reviews.
I may have the strangest freaking comic book that I have ever read. No, I take that back. But this one is a real doozy, and I'm trying to wrap my head around it. It's called Time and Vine Number 2. It's out this week from IDW Publishing. It is a time travel book, so you know I have to pick it up and read it. Here's the gimmick. You can go back in time. So the story takes place at this vineyard, and you can go in, and this vineyard has been around since forever, since like the 1800s. You can go back and you can find a bottle that was made that year, and you can sit there in the wherever they store the wines, whatever that place is called, and you can drink that wine and you can travel back in time to the year that vintage was made, and you can, depending on how you think about it, you can go to a specific date, and as long as the effects of the wine are going through your body, essentially that you're drunk, you can live in that day and time period. Then you come back, and then one of the requirements is you have to write down everything that's happened to you in this book so that other people know what has happened. Thing is, you can only go back to that day once. So in this story, our heroine who's new to this, she goes back to July 4th, like 1986, I want to say, 1986. At the end of the story, she wants to go back to that day again, but, you know, she can't because that's how the rules of time travel work in this world. It is really weird. So much so that part of it feels like, hey, we are the wine industry and we want to let people know about wines and some of the keywords that we use and wine manufacturing and all of that stuff. And there are literally a page and a half devoted to, let's take a tour of this winery and here's where all the things happen. And then there's this weird, it is so weird. The art is fine. The story is interesting, and there's like 10 different stories going on at the same time. And this is only issue 2. But the main girl who's bumped into this time traveling thing, and everybody who works at the winery, except for one person, knows about the time travel aspects of their wine. You know, her mother is got early stage Alzheimer's. She finds out that she had an aunt that she never knew about. The owner of the winery has something that happened in 1987 dealing with his wife, and that's why there's only one bottle of the wine left in the entire winery. There is a African-American guy who works there who's like, yeah, I used to time travel, but, you know, my kind of people can only travel back so far before, you know, it's not worth for us to travel back. And it's just layer upon layer of story going on in this book. It is weird. But it's time travel, so I had to pick it up. Again, part of it feels like this is a product being developed by a winery. And I tried to track down and see if this winery was real. I couldn't. But the closest I could find was that maybe this is a story that takes place in Connecticut. It's weird. Time and Vine Number 2. I'm giving it 3 slices of meatloaf out of 5. Do drink a red wine when you're eating your meatloaf. But Time and Vine Number 2, for a time travel story, and I didn't read issue 1, but for a time travel story, this one certainly takes the cake, or the Zinfandel, as a unique way to present time travel. So there you go. I don't think I've read a more strange book. Maybe, but I don't think so. Matthew, what do you have for us this week?
I got a comic. I got a comic. And it's from Archie.
Oh, okay.
And
Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
Dan DiCarlo. Yes. And once again, we come around to the annual issue of Sabrina. I kid. We love you guys. Chilling Adventures of Sabrina is the best comic book that you're probably not reading, no matter how much Stephen and I tell you that you should. Issue number 8 comes to the point where Sabrina, the cute teenage witch that you know from the cartoons of our youth, and by our, I mean old people like Stephen and I, is now embroiled in a war with her cute aunties. This is not, however, the cartoon Sabrina that you know. This is a weird gothic horror with all of the unpleasant gothic horror tinges, including the weird sex stuff in and around the corners, in that earlier, Sabrina's boyfriend Harvey was actually murdered by the Coven of Witches on Sabrina's 16th birthday. She called into play untold terrible magics to resurrect Harvey from the dead. What she doesn't know is that it's actually just Harvey's body. The mind inside is actually her father, who is an evil, evil sorcerer.
Oh, wait, so she's dating her father? Ooh.
No, she is dating her boyfriend. It's just that her boyfriend's mind is her father. And the weird part is this issue skirts it in very interesting ways, because it comes to a point where she's ready to kiss him. And even Edward Spellman, who has been played throughout the series as this utterly perverse, just this terrible person who has no boundaries and no limits, and there's nothing he won't do in pursuit of power, turns away from kissing his own daughter. And then he's like, well, maybe. And I'm like, you can't, guys. Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa is the writer. The art is by Robert Hack. And oh my God, this is a beautiful book. I'm telling you, this is a beautiful book.
Yeah, it is.
The book of this issue deals with the ramifications of the quote unquote resurrection of Harvey. But it does start with Sabrina dancing in her underwear in her room, singing My Boyfriend's Back, putting on the traditional Sabrina red sweater and miniskirt, which under Robert Hack's pen is a little bit shorter and a little bit teenagier of the 1960s, because this takes place in 1965. And there's a really wonderful moment in here that I love, that I think some people might think is too much. She sets up her secret liaison with Harvey in a nearby town in a diner where nobody ever hangs out, a little place called Pops, Pops Chocolate Shop. And as she's entering the chocolate shop, a weird kid with a really pointy nose is coming out. And he's like, get a room, you guys. Some people come here for the burgers. And she has a momentary bit of prestidigitation or precognition where she sees the afterlife with Archie universe, where Jughead is a zombie and she is married to Cthulhu.
That's weird.
And just for a second, it's there and then it passes. And it's a lovely moment because that book shares a writer with this book, even if it takes place in a different quote unquote continuity, if you can call it that. I mean,
no, Archie, it's totally a different continuity. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd call it continuity. It's a different track of the multiple Archie Comics universal tracks. But as the issue goes on, it becomes clear that two things are going to happen. One, Hilda and Zelda, who, by the way, Zelda is drawn in this issue as Joan Crawford.
Yeah.
And I love it. And I'm looking at Hilda and I know she's somebody and I know I should know. And I don't know. My brain wants to say maybe she's meant to be Betty Davis, but I don't think she's Betty Davis. In any case, Zelda is Joan Crawford when she's not a soulless ghoul with fangs. They come to fight Sabrina, and they discover that Sabrina is remarkably powerful for a little teenage girl. And then things happen. And there is a twist at the end of this book, which I'm not going to spoiler because it's out today. You need to go buy it. But it has just beautiful moments with all of the regular cast members, including Salem, and I can always hear the voice of Nick Bakay in the little robot cat puppet every time it happens. But these words coming out of it are just wrong, you guys. This is not for the faint of heart, and this is not something where it's, you know, the cute groovy ghoulies that we know. But it is fascinating. And it's really, really well done. Very bizarre, gothic, quasi-horror with little veins of V.C. Andrews, Flowers in the Attic, going through it. Four slices of meatloaf for Chilling Adventures of Sabrina number 8. I will say that that might be a higher score, and will be a higher score, if I could get this book on a more regular basis, because it's coming out quarterly now, which I'm good with. And if that's by design, that's all well and good. But when we started out, we had a run where it was like monthly for a minute, and then there was a break, and then there was a longer break. And I just love this comic. I love this book. I love Afterlife with Archie, and I want more of this, even though it ends with an ad for Riverdale. And I'm just like, I'm not that target audience, you guys. I'm not. But I'm okay with this, and you can do all the Riverdale you want if it means that you have the money to give me more Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, y'all.
Yeah. There you go. Thank you for that, Matthew. Definitely going to check that out because, like you, it is a favorite of mine.
It is beautiful. And this one is scary. Scary, scary.
I do like scary. I do like the scary. And they do bring the scary in that book.
They do.
It is
next
definitely
month is October.
Oh, yeah. Ooh.
Yeah.
Wait, this weekend.
What month is it?
It is it's August right now.
The next month is October.
Cool. Yes, the next month is October indeed. This past weekend, if you were paying attention on the Disney XD, you get to watch a 24-hour marathon of the DuckTales pilot episode or pilot movie or whatever that they're calling it.
Mm-hmm.
You can also head over to Major Spoilers right now because we have that entire pilot episode online for you to watch. It's over at the Disney XD YouTube channel. And one Rodrigo Lopez had a chance to check that out.
Wait, what was the name of the book?
It's not a book. It's a TV show.
Called?
Yeah, it's called the DuckTales. Oh, okay.
That's my one.
DuckTales! Everybody knows it. It's a show about ducks. It was on back in the day when I was a little baby, and I really enjoyed it then. And if you're familiar with my reviews, then you know that when they reboot things that I liked, I'm about 50 times more critical of them than things that I didn't particularly care about. But if you're familiar with my reviews, you know that I'm actually super critical of everything. Ergo, what chance does this have, right? it starts out pretty interesting. They're going pretty story heavy with it. Donald is taking care of his nephews. He's trying to apply for a job, and he just can't because his nephews are too rowdy. So he calls in a favor with a family member to watch them for a day while he goes on a job interview, and that is Scrooge McDuck. The nephews don't even know that they're related to Scrooge McDuck until this happens. And from then on, things kind of spiral out of control in McDuck Manor, which has a lot of like straight up magical artifacts that Scrooge just collected through his travels that the nephews accidentally activate. It's a lot of fun, actually, a lot of fun. I watched this on my own. Just kind of saw that it was on online, and I watched it, and it made me laugh out loud a few times.
Oh, good.
The nephews clearly all have very distinct personalities, but in the amount of time and being introduced to so many new characters, it was kind of hard to pinpoint them, except for Dewey, who is voiced by Bobby Moynihan, by the way, and is not as enthusiastic about things as the other two. The other two kind of get lost in between, but I'm sure more episodes will draw that out a little bit more. Much more central to this is Webbygale, if you're familiar with the old DuckTales. She's a character that got introduced. I don't think she's even in the first season. But here she's in it from the first episode. She's pretty central to everything that's happening. The nephews meet her and it's good times. So this is basically two episodes of DuckTales strung together. At the end of the first episode, Donald gets a job, and it just so happens that the job is with Flintheart Glumgold, Scrooge's arch nemesis. And so the second episode is Donald, as their sailor, taking them to the Lost City of Atlantis, while simultaneously Scrooge McDuck takes the nephews to the Lost City of Atlantis, because he is kind of having a midlife crisis of sorts, having these kids around and being like, hey, used to be a big deal. What happened to you? So he's going to show them, put them through horrifying danger to show them what's up. So there's some great stuff, lots of cute interactions between the characters. It's nice that they're really going that kind of like Karl Barks route of like Scrooge is an adventurer, Donald's an adventurer. Like, it's this wider world of like ghosts and monsters and ancient relics, populated by people who happen to be, you know, ducks or puppies or kittens. It's great. I really enjoyed it. The first episode, which is a lot more contained and has a lot less like overt adventure, was a lot better for me than the second. But I don't know. They're making a lot of good decisions. The show looks great. It has that kind of dot matrix, not dot matrix, but
Zip-a-tone.
Like that sort of like,
yeah, the Zip-a-tone pattern. Yeah.
That dot pattern in the backgrounds and in some of the characters' accents. It's an all-star cast, obviously. David Tennant is playing Scrooge McDuck. He does a great job. I think we discussed somewhere along the way that the fact that the whole cast sounds different isn't a big deal for me, because I watched it in Spanish anyway, so this is me watching DuckTales in English, so I assumed it was all going to be different. But yeah, I'm actually really into it. I think that it has been updated in a really good way. It's got some quick, funny moments. It's got some good like family stuff. It features moments of Donald and Scrooge kind of coming back together after having a fallout, and really it's the kids that bring them back together. Quite literally, since one of them blows up Donald's house and he has to move into the mansion. There's also some there's also some setup, because we find out that in Scrooge's adventures, Donald was involved, and also the triplets' mom was involved in these adventures. So the very last thing that happens is that whole thing gets opened up, and we don't know where anything there is going to go, because this is kind of uncharted territory as far as I know. So it's good. It's bringing some stuff from the past. It's drawing both from the series and from the comics, and also it's kind of paving its own way. So I was really happy with this. I'm going to give it 4.5 slices of meatloaf. I think there's plenty of time to make characters that didn't get a chance to stand out. I think there's plenty of time to really expand the world of DuckTales. The only thing that I will say seemed like a missed opportunity to me, depending on what they do with this character, is that at the end of the second episode, they have a reporter who kind of frames the narrative of what ends up happening in that second episode. And if you ever watch Quack Pack, and why would you, Daisy, like Daisy Duck, was...
I'm sorry.
I mean, I did. You know, which shows you my commitment to the DuckTales brand. Quack Pack had some good episodes, but Quack Pack suffered from the Disney afternoon problem of like trying to be too extreme. It's like, again, another thing that DuckTales does really well. It casts the nephews as kids. They're like 10. And
they're not edgelord teens.
Right. Exactly. It's not like this is a skateboarder and this is a slacker and this is a hacker. You know, like they're just like, they're kids, you know, and then they have their talents, but they're kids. And I forgot. Oh, yeah. Daisy is a reporter. So I was like, this is a missed opportunity to include Daisy right away. But I don't know. Maybe they're going to bring her in later. I don't see why they wouldn't, since they have the same voice actors for all the properties that Disney does. So if you watch, and I do because of my job, Mickey Mouse Clubhouse, Mickey and the Roadster Racers, and DuckTales. And actually, I think that what's that like? Mickey Mouse show that has like the old 20s style animation.
Yeah, that's what this animation is kind of based on.
Right. If you look at all those shows, the person voicing Donald is the same for all of them. The people voicing Mickey and Minnie and Daisy, they're all the same. So it's like they already have these voice actors on the payroll. So I don't see any reason why they wouldn't. Another thing, I don't know, I'm going a little long, but this is I love this stuff. In the intro, you see Gyro Gearloose. You see that's his name, right?
Gyro's he's the lanky inventor dude,
right? The inventor guy with his little light bulb robot. And you catch glimpse. I mean, you see classic DuckTales bad guys like the Beagle Boys, plus a few other ones. And
any sign of Fenton Crackshell?
Yes, I think I'm pretty sure he's in the intro as well. You see him just for a split second. That's a guy with like the slick back hair, right? All of these guys have different names in Spanish. So
he's Gizmo Duck.
Yeah, Gizmo Duck.
Oh, then no. I was thinking of who's the guy with the lucky
Badafamina, but Gilderoy Lockhart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's his
something
name. Like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm pretty sure I caught a glimpse of him. I don't know. Maybe it was just wishful thinking.
Well, I'm pretty sure if I'm not mistaken, Darkwing Duck will merge into the DuckTales universe in this show.
You are right. That is what I had heard. And they actually mention is like Duckburg. I forget what the other one plays, and Saint Canard, like all in when they're talking about Scrooge's like holdings, like Duck McDuck Industries and stuff, and their presence in other cities. So they're setting all that up already.
Cool.
So
cool.
I would definitely recommend it. It's online right now. If you've got kids who like adventure shows, I would definitely recommend it. I'm gonna tell my nephews all about it next time I talk to them. So yeah, definitely check it out.
There's only one question that I have to ask.
What's up?
Have they fixed the biggest problem in the series? The old
Launchpad McQuack, yes, he's in the show.
The old open, when the guy sings race cars, they show a jankety old Model T kind of sputtering down the road.
So
as their race car. And I want to know, did they fix that, or do I have to run to Disney headquarters and tell them that is not a race car, you guys?
I don't remember exactly how it goes, but the open is an open as opposed to a set of clips from the show, like the old one. Because if you remember the old open, it was basically a bunch of clips from the show with like two or three like clearly made for the open clips, like the one of like Scrooge swimming in space and then a little alien takes that dollar away from him. And that alien never shows up in the show. And I'm like, what the heck, DuckTales?
What are you doing?
That's because they never got a sixth season where a space alien comes down and calls everyone dum-dums.
Well, DuckTales. So one thing that I like about this one is that I feel like the old DuckTales was always very had some trepidation about supernatural stuff. Like by the time the show was like in its twilight years and was about to go out, they did the like DuckTales movie with like a genie and stuff. Like it seemed like they saved like actual straight up supernatural stuff for rare occasions, and everything was much more about either robots or some of those. I don't know.
Race cars, lasers, aeroplanes, man.
Right.
It's a dark.
So this
look.
Time around, I mean, in the first episode, there's like so much magic. It's just like magic, magic, magic. So it's an interesting direction to see them go. And I'm definitely not upset about it.
Very cool.
But yeah, like I was saying, the intro is its own intro. So I'd have to go back and see what they do over that. But I'm going to guess that they actually do have some sort of fast car.
You got a fast car.
Yep.
Is it fast enough that we can fly away?
Fast enough to get out of
here.
Duckburg and be someone.
There you go. Listeners, head over to majorspoilers.com. Check out all of the reviews over there, including, oh my gosh, Dark Knight Metal number one.
Oh, you can't kill the metal.
Oh, it is really good. I can say this now because the book is now on the shelf, but you will want to go and read Dark Knight Metal. It has all the cool stuff of 52, but it's Metal Man. I've got a couple things.
Think a chrome elongated man. That's kind of cool.
Well, can't go spoil too much.
Elongated man?
No, not an elongated man, but a certain plastic egg shows up again. And some
silly putty.
And some metal men also make an appearance. Yeah. So that's all over at majorspoilers.com, as is the Major Spoilers Poll of the Week.
Week.
So our longtime Poll of the Week contributor, Silver Gray, is back this week. He wants to know who would win in a fight, Ewoks or Minions? Rodrigo, we will start with you.
Oh, this is a tough one.
Yeah.
Mainly because I think they both speak the same language.
Not quite, but okay.
Nub.
So obviously there's a shared culture there. I think I would probably have to give it to Ewoks. It seems like Ewoks are actually used to hunting and fighting. They probably are multiple Ewok tribes, and they spend some time skirmishing and counting coup and actually, you know, obviously they took down the entire empire all by themselves.
Okay.
Whereas the Minions have not ever been in a movie that I've seen. So, no, that's not true. I saw the first Despicable Me. No, I saw the one that made me angry because the bad guy was a Mexican wrestler. So I've seen at least two Despicable Me movies. You know, the Minions seem to become less effective the more of them there are, which is like the reverse of Ewoks, because they're kind of clumsy. So I'll probably give it to the Ewoks.
Okay. I'm also going with the Ewoks because, as we've seen, Ewoks are cold-blooded murderers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And are willing to just take out stormtroopers to feed their family. And the Minions, they don't mean to kill their master. They just do it through incompetence. So Ewoks, I'm going to go for them as the Stone Cold Killers on this one. And they will emerge victorious with yellow drippings on their chins.
Ew. See, there is one thing that in the Minions backstory that cannot be underestimated. The Minions are created to gravitate, depending on which origin you believe, to the most evil person in the world.
Right, that's in the Minions.
So you have to figure that in the history of the Minions, which, by the way, Minions is a Greek word meaning small onion, will probably have been involved in some what Dr. Emmett Brown would refer to as some serious S word. So, I mean, you have to take into account that the Minions have seen some stuff. The Minions have been through some things, and yet I still have to believe that the you know, that hardscrabble existence, the living in the trees, the kind of that aboriginal existence that you have with the Ewoks, and the fact that they were either prepared to deal with heavy armor and infantry and guys on speeders, or they more impressively improvised ways to deal with the weaponry and the things that they had in their jungle. I think that you have to realize that the Ewoks are just extremely talented little murder bears. And that no matter who you are or what you are, even if you are a little evil suppository designed to find the most evil thing in the world, the Ewoks will mess up your program. So I had to go with Ewoks as well because, you know, I have kind of merged the actual Empire Strikes Back with the Empire Strikes Back from Family Guy because I don't watch Empire that often. So I can't remember if the scene where they're playing drums on the severed heads of the Empire guys is real or not, or if just something.
They play with the helmets. Yeah, with helmets. So we don't know if there probably aren't heads in there, but they definitely get those helmets.
But we do know that they were going to put Han Solo and roast him on the spit when they bring him into the village.
They were going to eat Han Solo. They were going to eat lukewarm bathwater. They were going to kill our heroes. So definitely the Ewoks are scary, scary murder bears.
Yeah. So 100% here for Ewoks. Not so much from everyone else. Burning Dragon Bread says, despite my hatred of Ewoks, I think the fight would end in a draw. The two groups would team up, bring about the apocalypse when they crossbreed and create a new race that resembles Care Bears, except they shoot toxic death rays from their fingers and eyes instead of love beams from their stomachs.
Oh, that's terrifying.
Yeah. In a one-on-one fight, I'd give it to the Ewoks. Ewok hits Minion with a rock and tied to a stick, and Minion cries, fight is over. In a large-scale battle, the Minions win by sheer dumb luck and the fact that they appear to be immortal. They have been around since before the dawn of time where we have seen dead Ewoks. Huh, interesting. Matthew, how has everyone voted so far?
It's a 60-40 split right now, with 3 out of 5 people leaning towards the tiny murder bears, but still a strong showing at 40% for the suppositories of doom. I think my version of it is colored by the fact that Minions are cute and silly and goobery. And what I really know of Minions are the memes that my cousin puts on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend, who is an adult entertainer, who actually does a show on the internet where she dresses up as a Minion. So both of those things are
not the mainstream approach to Minions. Well, maybe the memes.
Maybe the memes. I don't know. So I feel like the Minions are somewhere between a Hallmark card and internet porn. And so I haven't actually, got a whole lot of context.
All right. Well, thank you for that awkwardness, Matthew. Listeners, head over to majorspoilers.com and cast your vote in the Major Spoilers poll of the week, I guess. Be great.
Don't.
Hey, this week, the Defenders hit the Netflix. So you got your Luke Cage and your Iron Fist and your Jessica Jones and your Daredevils. You're not going to find any of them in Defenders, the Epic Collection, the Six-Fingered Hand Saga. For Marvel Comics. I asked Matthew for a really cool Defender's Hand story, and he offers this up.
What?
So there is one character that is in this that you will definitely see in the show, because I've seen a trailer in which this character appears.
Patsy Walker Hellcat?
Correct.
Yeah.
Patsy Walker.
Who is not yet Hellcat.
Yeah.
On TV. No, but this may not have your Luke Cage, but this does have the Incredible Hulk. This has the Savage Submariner. This has the Silver Surfer, the Sentinel of the Space Waves. This has the Son of Satan. This has Doctor Strange. I got caught in an alliteration loop. It has the Devil Slayer. It has the Gargoyle. It has Nighthawk and Hellcat and the Valkyrie. And it has, what's her name?
Ghost Rider. And yeah, whatever Doctor Strange's girlfriend's name is.
Clea.
Yeah.
Clea, daughter of Umar. It has Man-Thing.
It's got Dracula in it.
In one of the more terrifying Man-Thing appearances in my memory.
Oh, yeah. So here's the deal. This is I went ahead and got the full collection. You can get this on Comixology. In digital form. And I will say that the reprints, and I talked about this on, I guess it's going to be on an upcoming Legion Clubhouse. But one of the things that's interesting when you look at these reprints with the recolorings is it loses something because of the way the printing goes. You know, in the old days, you could look at a comic book page and you could see the little dots and the color separations and all that stuff. And that made the comic feel real. When I read the digital recolored remastered, and these are the things that you get in the omnibus editions and all of that, the color just looks super, super flat. And so I'll say that if you're going to get the digital version, or if you're going to go get this in a hardback form through our Amazon link, the colors don't quite look like the stuff from the original days. And I did track down, we do have a new comic book store in town. I did track down one of the original issues of this to just kind of compare. And there's a real big difference in the 1972 Defenders comics and the whatever 2012 recoloring remastering of the book that we're reading.
These are from 81, by the way.
Oh, from 81?
Yeah.
Is that what it is? Why do I see here that it says collecting volume 6 Defenders 1972, 92-109?
They're identifying the volume of Defenders that began in 1972 as opposed to the volume of Defenders that began in 1999.
Okay, I see. For this issue run, I see what it's saying.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. So there is a lot of stuff that is outside the Six-Fingered Hand in this collection that you don't need to read. You really just need to read like issues 92 through maybe 100.
I would say 100 or maybe 103, because there's some fallout because of the way, the stories are structured, the old school Marvel stories.
There's a whole issue called Renewal where everyone goes out and, reflects on the adventure they've just had. And in the case of Dr. Strange, he goes out to, I think, where does he go? Africa. And he hangs out with a tribe for a day. And, it's very, very weird.
I believe now, is that not the issue that has the Submariner and the Valkyrie flirting and swimming together?
I believe it does. By the time I got past the main Six-Fingered Hand, I was kind of just skimming through it and catching the main bits. But the big
that
thing
is the
happened.
Best issue.
Yeah, the big things that's happening after the Six-Fingered Hand story wraps up is the Nighthawk story. In this, Nighthawk is fully functional, and then suddenly he has got part of his soul ripped from his body, and so he only has mobility of his body at night. And soon as the day strikes, he becomes paralyzed once again. And so there's a lot of that fallout going on. And then there's this other character that pops up. That's a demon, and so there's more exploration of, what's his name, Isaac's story through this thing.
Isaac Christensen, the Gargoyle.
Yeah. So this, if you want to see what people thought of rock and roll and demons and scary magics in the late 70s, early 80s, you want to pick up this volume, because there's a whole thing where they go to Detroit Rock City, and the devil appears on stage, and they have to take the devil down.
Yeah. The thing, and the reason that I picked.
Oh, the thing's not in this one. Sorry.
Shush. The reason why I picked this is twofold. One, you said, hey, we need some classic Defenders. And I said, okay, do you want real classic Defenders? And you said, yeah, sure, whatever, which is generally how our conversations go. But this is not my very favorite Defender story, but this is probably the Defenders big 80s opus. There's also the Avengers Defenders War, which I didn't think was appropriate because it involved more Avengers. But this is really the Defenders going big. This is the Defenders doing kind of a quasi-modern, multi-issue, overarching Chris Claremont X-Men plot.
Oh, no, it's big. It's broad. This is a huge story.
Well, it starts with Doctor Strange breaking reality.
Yeah.
Which is fascinating. The whole thing starts because reality is starting to come apart, and Doctor Strange keeps using his teleport spell and the Defenders themselves are damaging reality and making it possible for the titular Six-Fingered Hand, who, by the way, are six evil demons from the beyond.
Well, there's also the whole thing about all of Eternity, who is trying to get back bits and pieces of his body. Who don't want to come back, and because of that, they're going to destroy Eternity. So they have to travel the globe trying to track down these bits and pieces of Eternity.
Yep.
In a really weird way.
It's really interesting. This is written by J.M. DeMatteis.
Yeah.
And even with this is a 37-year-old story now, even with the Don Perlin art, and even with the coloring being the pinnacle of 1981 technology, and the paper that on my copy being old, you know, sort of Browning paper, I really still dig this story, and it still feels not necessarily modern, but it still feels of a piece with modern comic book storytelling. I mean, this is in that transition period between the wall of text, which mm-hmm. is still in play, and the more modern kind of streamlining and the kind of a dialogue and character driven storyline. And it's interesting to see these starting to come together and see those techniques starting to be used with, you know, 27 defenders dancing around.
Oh yeah. Now, if your parents were of the type in the 80s that warned you that the devil was everywhere, they would have forbidden you from reading the Defenders because demons and devils are overtaking yeah. everyone in this book. And that's, you know, six of them are forming together to create the six-fingered hand.
Go Satan forward, is right. literally in this.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Literal Satan. And one of the main heroes is in fact the son of Satan.
Oh yeah. He's got the whole pentagram right there on his chest and everything. Yeah. Big spoiler alert here. Patsy Walker, Hellcat. Oh, there's a reason why she's called Hellcat.
Or is there?
Oh, there's
yeah,
a...
They're
never quite clear on that because, you know, she and Damien do eventually get married, Damien being the son of Satan.
No, I'm talking about the whole thing with Satan's her father.
Satan yeah. claimed to be her father. But is he really? Because that would make her husband's sister.
Ah, they're demons. Well,
I guess.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, we just talked about Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, mm-hmm. which is one of those comics that at least gets pretty close to that line, right? A lot of like old school EC stuff got right up to that line as well. So I was yeah. like, are they actually going to do that? Are they actually going to do this thing where it's like, well, we just found out we're brother and sister, but we're demons. So
yeah. we're still in love.
Yeah. And they didn't, you know, it's Satan goes like, maybe all of this stuff is,
we do lie.
Yep. So, and I was like, oh, well, they're not, because this is Marvel Comics and they don't want to do that. So no, it's not actually going to happen.
Right.
Which is fine. That's probably the optimal thing. I do like that Patsy being a huge, huge bastard to everyone is a plot point.
Like, oh yeah, multiple times. She'll just slowly freak out.
Yeah, it's like people are like, oh no, something really bad happened. And then like she starts cracking up.
Yeah, laughing at the situation, or somebody will say yeah. something, she'll go into a rage and fly at them. Yeah. It's like, ah, it's because you're a son of a blah, 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 blah. And she just is like, oh my God, what have I said? I'm so sorry. What's come over yeah. me? The fact that you're a demon spawn, perhaps. So
what's really great to me is that, you know, we've touched on the fact that Satan is in this. Mm-hmm. What this really is an overarching fix for Marvel's Satan.
Yeah,
because there are six or seven different people claiming to be the literal devil in the Marvel Universe circa mm-hmm. 1981. And what this story does is it takes all these idiots and puts them together. And the whole plot is we are trying to merge into one giant real super devil, which you can tell the super devil because he rides on a motorcycle.
Now that's Ghost Rider, like that. Who also appears in this book.
But yeah, and it's really interesting to see, again, you know, you talk about those bits and pieces of modern storytelling. They're almost effortlessly kind of stitching together bits of, you know, the Mephisto who tortured the Silver Surfer and the Satan who's the son of Satan's dad and some dude named Thog,
mm-hmm.
which sounds like something that Captain Crunch would fight to try and keep the Crunch Berries from getting squishy.
Mm-hmm.
But they're trying to tie it all together here. And also, in, you know, accidentally or probably intentionally giving us an interesting kind of almost normal superhero adventure story.
Oh, yeah,
if
no.
you ignore the fact that they're, you know, fighting for the soul of reality against the literal devil and his five devil brothers.
Yeah. Yes. It's really cool because not only do you have them every issue or every other issue taking on one of these six aspects of Satan or the devil or the demons or whatever, But then you also have some really cool drama stuff going on, like I said, with Nighthawk, with Patsy, with Son of Demon.
With Gargoyle.
Gargoyle, you know, he has his own story that he's going on, too. It's all really, really cool in that way. And, yeah, with the rise of the Kiss Army and everything, this is definitely a book that would have made a lot of people happy back during this time period. The one complaint, well, there's many complaints, but one of the complaints that I have about this story is, and maybe it's just in my collection, in this collected volume, but it's like there'll be a page and a half of one group of one party doing their story, and then suddenly in the middle of the page, it'll switch to somebody else somewhere else doing their thing for a page and a half, and then it'll switch back to another group. And it's just a weird breakup. It's like, make that switch happen on the page turn or something. It just felt a little bit too abrupt in some of their scene, location, character changes in throughout this entire series that I did not particularly like.
Yeah, that does happen. There are a lot of players. And, oh, yeah. You know, and the fact that the Defenders is a non-team is their shtick. They're, they're, you know, untraditional. So at certain points in the collection, you'll see all of a sudden Mr. Fantastic pops up, or, you know, for half an issue, we've got Wonder Man working with them.
Mm-hmm.
There's no real set lineup. And after 100, all of a sudden you see the Beast start popping up a lot, and the Beast becomes part of the next phase of Defenders. But leading up to that, you haven't really seen much. And then all of a sudden here's the Beast every 5 minutes. And
yeah, it's pretty funny because I've never really kept up with Defenders comics, but I remember two characters being in the Defenders, Silver Surfer and the Beast.
Yep.
And, like in the first issue of this run of Defenders, Dr. Strange is like, Silver Surfer, I need your help. And Silver Surfer's like, no, I'm sad. And like the Beast is pretty much not in this. Like he shows up later.
Yeah, he does.
But yeah, it's like what I perceive to be the Defenders is like that comes later.
Yeah.
I think the coolest panel in this whole entire book, I mean, there's a lot of cool ones, but I think it's in issue 100. Where they're all in Doctor Strange's Sanctum Sanctorum, and it's just like 27 Defenders all in one room standing there, including the Hulk and Valkyrie, and I'm pretty sure Ghost Rider is in that shot. Silver Surfer standing in the background. That is a really cool panel, and I wouldn't mind trying to track that original art page down if it was out there. You know which one I'm talking about, Matthew? I think it's right at the end of their adventure where they're all gathered together, or right before they're going on their final battle with Satan, but they're all in the room together having a conversation. It's like really cool.
I think so, yeah. That I think, and that's one of the selling points for me of this, is it does have a huge scope and a lot of characters. And we talk about the Gargoyle. The Gargoyle's first appearance is in these pages. The six-fingered hand actually turns him into the Gargoyle and sets him on the Defenders. And then you're like, oh, and for literally the next 75 issues, this weird old man in the orange Gargoyle body is one of the core members of the team.
Yeah.
It's really neat just to kind of see this whole thing come together and be in play. But I do wish that we could have done the story where the Defenders and six Avengers go to another world and fight the Squadron Supreme.
Mm.
But 39 superheroes banging around is just way too much. And, you know, this is 20 issues of comics.
Well, and this one is, and again, in the entire volume, is a bit much. It's
a big book.
It's a big story just in the part that is the, literally the six-fingered hand without the prologue or the, prequel and the postlogue, all that stuff, epilogue. There's some trimming that needs to be done in this story, because there are times where I literally felt like, oh, please, come on, move on with this story. And it's really not that long of an issue. But there are times where it's just like, let's cut away to this action where two people have a conversation while Nighthawk gets wheelchaired into the limousine. And that happens like 5 times in the book. And it's like, come on, doesn't need to be there.
That's the thing about these comics, is that they're not planned to be a volume, right? So they're like, okay, so here's this plot, right? Or this bunch of demons are doing this stuff, but also you've got all those small moments that you have to have in there. And if you knew that this has to be told over the span of 12 issues, mm-hmm. then you would fit them certain places. But since this doesn't, then you're like, okay, my next issue is a big Nighthawk issue. Mm-hmm. So I have to have this thing where he's like talking to his agent or something. I didn't catch the whole lawyer thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So his lawyer or something is like, hey, you got to help me out. And the guy's like, how are you paralyzed? And like, that's, this is like 10 panels of that, right?
Yeah.
Which right. is like being, well, I'm paralyzed. So like, you got to help me out. And he's like, I don't understand how this could have happened, man.
I just saw you walking the other day.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. It was like a guy freaking out about Nighthawk being paralyzed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like that story could have been part of an issue in which we follow Nighthawk's and Nighthawk's journey and his issues that he's having. But because of the way that these stories are told, it just has to fit somewhere, right? And it's like we have a page here in between the Silver Surfer punching out the Hulk because he's being mind controlled and Valkyrie being turned into a chicken dragon, like
yeah.
in between these two we have this page where we can tell this chunk of the story, so let's do that.
Yeah And I guess you know for a story that takes place over 2 years, this is a big spanning thing, and again coming out monthly, you would probably need to, and there are many points in this book where literal panels are reproduced to say, this is what happened last time. Let us recap the story last time over the course of these 5 or 6 panels. And again, realizing that that's a month-to-month format issue thing and not a trade paperback collection issue, it makes sense. But when you read it in the trade, it's just like, oh my gosh, this is difficult at times.
It can be, but it also does give them the chance to do things like issue 107 that I love, where just in the middle of this weird conversation, something happens and the Valkyrie is shot in the head and dies.
Mm-hmm.
And they spend half an issue dealing with the characters and their loss and everyone going, this can't be. And then they have a funeral and her friends show up and Thor and Spider-Man and all these people show up. And you're like, this is actually really skillfully done. I mean, it feels, I'm not saying that it's the same as going to an actual funeral, but it feels like it's touching and it feels like it's meaningful. But then, of course, you know, we have the cliffhanger at the end and then we have to jump into the next issue, which then has to once again say, okay, here's what happened last time, you guys. But you get into that thing where, because of the monthly expectations of a book in the 70s and 80s, each issue starts with the, oh, what is going on? It's the Enchantress. She has come to do something. And each person, when they first appear, says, yes, Hulk, I, the Submariner, will assist you.
Yeah.
You have all those moments, but then you also get really, you get things that don't necessarily happen so much in modern comics anymore. And I feel like it kind of, I won't say it balances out, but there are definitely positives and negatives to that old school storytelling, you know, the Jim Shooter Marvel formula from the 80s.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I do like this. I do like the story that is the six-fingered hand in this, because it is the Defenders. It is magical. It is demons and Satan and just some real surprises for characters and character developments that are really, really, really neat. But I think if you're going to go out and buy this, it's like $24 on Comixology. I didn't see what the price was on Amazon, but I'm sure it's around the same price for the physical copy. Do realize that there's a bunch of stuff before and after this that is important, because again, you don't meet Isaac in the, well, I guess you do meet it. He's like the issue right before the six-fingered hand starts. But, you know, you've got that. You've got the Nighthawk story that's important. You've got to figure out what's going on with Doctor Strange here. It's important. But if you're just wanting the six-fingered hand, you need to read, like we said, 92 through 101, something like that. Yeah, after the 100th issue. Yeah.
Because the six-fingered
101 is the renewal, right?
Right.
Yeah.
100 wraps up the six-fingered hand with Satan going, maybe I'm evil, maybe I'm not.
But I really love my daughter. I love my daughter, and so therefore you've got me. You can all go home now. I'm not going to destroy the universe.
It's his son that he loves, by the way.
Oh, okay.
She's not actually his daughter, because again, later marries his son. And even Marvel's not.
Secret Wars.
There's no way you can tell this story today.
I don't know. I think you could.
I don't think you can get away with it in an all ages comic. I think this would have to be set up.
No,
as,
you could
know,
totally
Marvel
get away
Max
with this
for a Vertigo book, because this is, I mean, this is a story about the literal devil trying to turn New York into hell. And you're one of your main characters is the son of Santa. And I mean, you have elements here that are left over from the 70s monster.
I don't know. Mephisto pops up enough times in regular Marvel comics now.
That's Mephisto. I mean,
he's in this book.
But yeah, that's like Shuma Garath showing up in the Marvel versus Capcom stuff. It's a throwback. It's something going, hey, remember when the Silver Surfer fought the literal devil? Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Know what I mean?
What do you think, Rodrigo? Could you make this today?
I think you probably would have to push it onto like a weird imprint or make it its own volume. It would be difficult to see them do this with what's popular right now. Spider-Man?
Spider-Man's always popular.
Kids are reading?
Yeah, the like, Iron Man's.
Yeah, yeah.
Dan Slott's Twitter feed.
Yeah.
Valkyrie.
Yeah, Valkyrie.
She's in the Thor movie, you know.
Yeah, she is.
She's played by the woman from Westworld.
Yeah, anyway, that's Rodrigo, what were you saying?
I think this, I don't know. It really depends how they did it. If they turned it much more into an action thriller and it was just mostly people punching demons, but still kept some of the same story beats, they could probably do it. If they really wanted to get into the, like, you know, hell and human sacrifice and all this other stuff, they might push it. And they might push it into an imprint or something a little bit different, like a limited series on purpose, because that allows them to brand it like something like the Max series and like, you know, like Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, like all this other stuff that looks different from your mainstream comics.
Yeah, okay, I can see that, but I think they could probably do something like this, and people wouldn't even blink. Not in today's world. What's your bottom line on this, Rodrigo?
I thought it was all right, but I don't know. It's kind of not for me. I'm not really invested in pretty much any of these characters. I've got a fundamental issue with magic guys, and like Doctor Strange is like the second most egregious magic character in comics, as far as I'm concerned. They just never explain anything. He just can just do stuff. The first one's Satana.
Oh yeah.
She talks backwards.
But mostly it's because she hangs out with
Batman,
the DC Comics guy. Yeah, because she hangs out in DC Comics and things are like even more intense over there, so yeah. She ends up performing even more ridiculous feats of unexplained magic.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I mean, that aside, this was fun. This was interesting, but it's weird to see a story put together with like 100% characters that you kind of don't care about.
Yeah. I wonder, you say that. Just, so let's address that, Matthew, Matthew and Rodrigo. In 1980, whatever this book came out.
Yes.
Were these characters, what level were they at? Because we've talked before about how before the Iron Man movie, Iron Man was probably a C-list Marvel hero.
Right.
Where
Doctor
were these guys
Strange
at?
Was the top of the mid card in.
So he's a B+.
Yeah, the Hulk, I think, in the 80s, the Hulk was kind of a mixed bag because the Hulk was still played as very much an anti-hero. He wasn't, you know, the top tier, hey, I've been in the Avengers, you guys guy. But he was coming off of the Bill Bixby series, which made him probably the most or the second most recognizable Marvel hero after Spider-Man. The rest of the Defenders are the set pieces. They're the guys who never got solo books. They're your Beasts and your Gargoyles and your Valkyries. And these are groups of people who, throughout the previous issues, the previous 100 issues of Defenders, were the guys who filled in the cracks of groups featuring mm-hmm. characters like Daredevil and Doctor Strange and Power Man. They were those fifth and sixth guys who were there to round out the team. And I think that's what's fascinating about this is they bring together just this legion of C-list guys. Mm. And I really love it. But yeah, Doctor Strange fine. And the Hulk are your big names here.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a fine story. And again, if you're into the magic and the devils and all that stuff, I think you'll enjoy the heck out of this. I think it's a fine book. It gets a little winded at times. It's cool.
Thematis does have a tendency to get with the talkie and really, really existential claptrap talkie. Some of it's beautiful existential claptrap talkie. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that as a terrible, you know, slap you down. You're a bad person, J.M. Thematis. He gets very existential and very, you know, what is the nature of good and evil and what is love? Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me. Don't.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Also, let's all sing together a rock song and raise the literal devil. Yeah.
We're gonna, you can't kill the metal. The metal will live on.
Oh, boy. So go check it out. Defenders, the Epic Collection. It's the Six-Fingered Hand Saga. If you just do a search for, and I tried doing this a couple of times, if you just do a search for Six-Fingered Hand, nothing's going to pop up, but you actually have to do Defenders, the Six-Fingered Hand Saga, and it will pop up. But I did put a
Six-Fingered Hand, you're going to get definitions of what's called polydactylism.
Yes, that's exactly what pops up.
Have a sixth finger on your hand.
Yes.
Depending on who you are, that might be fascinating.
Yes, maybe. But I did put a link in the show notes if you want to head over to Amazon.com and purchase this, again, using that link at majorspoilers.com to make any purchases. It doesn't matter if it's comic book or movie or whatever it is that you're buying, typewriter supplies. If you buy it through that link at majorspoilers.com, a little bit comes back our way. You don't have to pay anything extra, and Jeff Bezos owes us money. So look at it as a win-win-win for everyone. And I think that will wrap it up for this week's episode of the Major Spoilers Podcast. Thank you so much for downloading and listening. Thank you for being part of the Major Spoilers experience. We are going to be back next week, because you know what next week is? Pet Avengers. Not only is it going to be the Pet Avengers, but this is one requested by one of our great patrons over at patreon.com/majorspoilers. We'll get into the Pet Avengers next week on the Major Spoilers Podcast, because we know that you love comics, and we do too. And we will talk with you soon.
Stop talking about comic books or I'll kill you. I don't care if the Hulk could defeat the Man of Steel. I'm gonna rearrange your face if you continue to debate whether Logan's claws could pierce Steve Rogers' shield. I just couldn't care less if they bring back Kraven. Spider-Man's a clone. Stop spending all our cash on back issues of The Flash, or I swear to God you're gonna spend your twilight years alone.
This podcast is copyright 2017 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.